too many Tic Tacs in the town.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the 3:38 starting time. Please welcome from Toronto, Ontario, Canada, Matthew Wiley. Play away, please.
Hold it. Golf Landing 179. I said 180 to Ryan and gang. I guess I don't even know what number it is now. I think it's 179. All I do know is that's Arcade Fire. Rebellion. Such a good band. Another Canadian band. How much more can Canada offer the United States without getting repaid? Neil Young. Every time I close my eyes. They did an SNL with Arcade Fire and Mick Jagger. The best performance I've ever seen in my life. Out of 40 years plus of SNL. It was incredible. Check it out. That's amazing. Golf Landing 179. 179. That is the podcast. Riviera week, great course, tough course, good field, smaller field, low scoring. End of the California swing, and last week was. I mean, listen, Daniel Berger needs to get more credit than he does because he's a champion. He knows how to win. He's got that. Glint in his eye. Is glint a word? He's got that something in his eye that he just bites down and he knows how to close it out. And that's Daniel Berger. US Open type kind of guy. Just great hands, good wedge player. Gets out of trouble. Just smart and knows how to win. And that's Daniel Berger. And he deserved that. Very much a Spieth-like player. Cantlay played well. It just, the best player deserved to win last week for sure. And this week you're going to have the best player win again. It may sound unusual, but this is a course that demands elite talent, creativity, strategy, course history, lack of mistakes, good wedge play, good around the green play, good iron play. Much like Augusta and the majors, which you see a lot of correlation between here and Augusta winners. Why? Not because the courses are necessarily similar, albeit there are elevation changes. But it just takes creative shot making. Bubba Watson's won here 3 times. Bubba Watson has won the Masters 2x. Why is that? He's just a naturally creative, gifted shot maker. And that is something that is demanded at Riviera, especially at a week like this at a PGA setup. And I can still hear the song playing in the background, which is good. This week, I promise, we will get, and my mythical team of cutline specialist, Bert. Yasun, Jeff. Who else is there? Oh, there's more guys. I probably fired half of them. They got it wrong badly at Pebble Beach again because, I don't know. I just can't gauge weather. I let them off the hook. I didn't want to destroy the bit. We'll work it again this week. But another catastrophe for the cut line team here at the office. Really, the people that I create in this narrative of the cut line team that I've hired is just a front for my ineptitude. So I can blame them when it's wrong and not blame myself. All of my content is farcical. If you haven't figured that out already, some of it's real. I'll qualify it. Much like the Ryan Moore is the best dressed. Official world golf ranking number one best dressed. I mean that. That is a serious tweet. I'm not making that up. He looks so comfortable. He looked like he just got off a 5-10 blind table at Harrah's Casino. That's how you want to play. Comfort. Function. Form follows function. Function follows comfort. There you go. And let's talk about Russell Knox for a second. Because his penalty, round four, hole one, in the fairway, he did nothing intentional to influence the movement of the ball in the fairway. And the ball moved, a quarter inch when he set his club down. It was the fairway was sloped. It was rolling towards the ocean. It's gravity and math and science and physics. The rules official came in, said, no, it's not a penalty. Did you believe you caused the movement of the ball? No. It was not ruled a penalty. A few holes later, they deemed it a penalty. It totally took him out of the entire tournament. I don't know why they continue to rely on people who weren't there to make an assessment of the rule. Number one, in every situation, do you know for a fact whether or not you caused the ball to move? I don't know. Let's go to the truck. Enjoy your round. This isn't 1774. We'll go to the cameras, the million cameras. We'll go to the truck. We'll help you out. We won't put it on the volunteers. We won't put it on the rules official in the straw hat. And we will not put it on you, the player. Just go about it. We'll get back to you about 20, 30 minutes. And that's that. And if it's a penalty like McNealy the day before or Wolf, a couple of weeks ago at Amex when it wasn't a penalty and then Saturday it was, then we'll tell you. But the second, because it's worse saying it's not a penalty, you going throughout your round and then you being surprise, dude, you're actually three shots back. But then also the rule itself, in no way, and as someone who has invested in Russell Knox, in no way was that something you deem as being, detrimental to the field. Was he intentionally trying to move the ball? No. Was he negligent in any way, stepping on it, kicking it, swinging his club around to move the ball and get an advantage? No, not at all. None of that. And so why should it be punitive when you don't know what's happening underground? Was there a little earthquake there? Did an ant move it? Was there a gust of wind in that area of the ball that moved the ball? You don't know. He didn't do it. That's the nature of the rule. Do you believe you intentionally moved the ball or anything you did? No, I didn't. Okay, that's it. And so why deny someone who was probably going to win or had a very, very good chance to win? Because of what? Gravity? Did that affect anything? Did it improve him at all? No. It's ridiculous. The rule is ridiculous. It needs to be interpreted from an intent or negligence standpoint. When you go back to the truck, would Russell not, did moving the ball a quarter inch to the fairway, did that affect him at all? No. But it affected everyone. Everyone playing him, it affected him. It took him out of the game. It's not fair. It's totally not fair. It wasn't really fair to Matt Wolf. We're just interpreting the penalty. It wasn't fair to Maverick McNealy. If you're trying to cheat, yes, that's a penalty. If you're kicking the ball down the fairway to get a better lie, yes. But just interpret it. It affects all of us. It affected everything. I know it affected a bunch of people, me, on DraftKings. Hundreds of thousands of dollars in play. And you want to see Russell Knox win because he was probably, at that point, he was, you know, he was likely very much in play to win. And when someone taps you on the shoulder a few holes later, said, yeah, that was a penalty. Remember when we said it wasn't a penalty? Yeah, it was a penalty. You're fucked. Mentally, at least I would be. Doesn't take much. Because from a strokes gain standpoint, I mean, he was, what, third approach last week? What was he? One, two, three, four. Yeah, third, fourth. Of guys who made the cut. Four strokes gained. And speaking of strokes gained, I know there was some commentary, I think it was last week, about strokes gained and its relevance. And I think Steve Elkington said that, you know, players don't use it. I don't know if he generally said that all players don't use it. He doesn't use it. He knows other players who don't. That could be true to him. I can't say it's not. I mean, it may be true to him. I would not say it's true to other players because I know players who do use strokes gained as a tool to assess their performance. But the commentary was to wash away strokes gained data as useless. And I don't understand it. It doesn't make sense. Players don't use it. So why are we talking about it? Let's sort of passively go back to 2017 and start bashing fantasy sports players or people within a golf Twitter community who talk about it a lot. I don't want to go back to that. Listen, if you're not part of that, if you're not part of that circle, don't bash people who use strokes gained data just because you're not part of that environment. If you don't play fantasy sports, that's fine. But some people use that data a lot, including me, maybe not as much as some people. And I understand players who don't use it, but it's two entirely different consumers of the data. You've got players, and then you've got people who are using it to build rosters on fantasy sports and bet. And if you have anything baseline, which is what strokes gained is, baseline to a tour average, it's going to help you a tremendous amount figuring out who's better at something compared to a tour baseline average. And yes, he brought up a good point of some putts uphill and some putts downhill, and strokes gained putting may not be accurate. But I tell you what, strokes gained approach is, and strokes gained tee to green is, and off the tee is, just look at Tiger Woods' strokes gained tee to green for about 50 years, or Russell Knox last week. You know by statistically, who are the best iron players on tour, and it maps out to the best tour players in the world. So just because you don't necessarily understand it or don't play fantasy sports, don't mock it or bash it. I don't like NASCAR. I don't get it. I'm not going to mock people who play it just because I personally don't like it or don't play it. But there is an entire swath and group of people who do like it, and it's offensive to them if I say NASCAR sucks. That's not fair to them. It's not an objective truth because some people like it and use it as strokes gained data. It's not objectively true that it's useless because it's very useful to figure out relative to the field who is better now, current, 1 year, 10 year, 5 years relative to the field. It pans out every time. And there are exceptions. And it may not tell a player if they're better or worse amongst their own game. I understand that part that Elkington was making. But don't go back to the point where, especially since it's the major revenue driver for sports, especially golf, especially with the partnership of the PGA, especially with PointsBet, especially with all of us using strokes gained data and how useful it is to us, don't go back to the four-year-old model of saying nerd bashing, quote, nerd bashing, about how this data is useful, is useless, stop talking about it because I don't understand it. It's terrible content. I'm not going to tell you what content to put out there. You can do what you want, but it's terrible content. Two entirely different audiences, two entirely different consumers of the data, player versus, you know, better. They don't reconcile. I don't know. I mean, if you don't think data to a baseline is important, then how is everything's to a baseline? Is it colder than it was yesterday? Yes, it is. It's fucking like -100 right now. I'm tired of it being colder than it was the day before. And then last year, that's important data. And there's some data that I don't find useful, like cash cheese futures on the Chicago Exchange. Cash settled cheese futures. I'm sure it's important to some people. It's not important to me because cheese is a joke, as I've talked about. I had to cover up the mic because there's some huge cheese fans in this America. Everything has cheese on it. I don't care about cash-settled cheese futures, but I'm sure that data is important to someone, is my point. Speaking of strokes gain and data, DraftKings Contest Weekly is back for Golflandia. $5, you cheapskates. Single entry, 300 people. Guaranteed money, meaning if one person signs up, it's guaranteed. But don't do that. No rake. Meaning they don't take anything off the top. It's a pretty good payout. You get epic legendary status, industry status. I may make you a guest of the podcast. I may make you CEO of the Cutline staff. And I may make you fire that useless tool, Jeffk. Jeffk. You have to come in and fire that loser. Handing me a box for -3 for last week. What a joke, Jeffk. From Kenosha. Nothing against Kenosha. It's fine. Spieth is good at golf. Let's just admit that. And the thing about Spieth being good at golf is that it's good for golf in that people pay attention. Spieth is just a marketable asset for the tour that even non-golf fans will tune in to see what Spieth is doing, in my opinion. He's just a great human, good marketer, and his swing. I mean, I posted a picture of his tempo, his swing tempo. It's markedly different. He just looks very, very good. Cantlay looks good. Cantlay is just I talked to Greg Les Inc about this. You talk about golfers who are without flaws, without really any sort of minor weaknesses in their games, who are really great, really, really great at everything. Cantlay is one of those people. What is he bad at? I mean, he's always going to top 5, top 10 at everything. He's got such a balanced swing. He's incredibly smart, incredibly well-dressed, by the way, and just does everything so well. DJ, JT, Rom, Healthy Tiger, Cantlay. Is there anyone else? Brooks at some points. The Big Tongan, Tony Finau, of course. Max Homa is becoming a legend. Max Homa gave credit to the community. Not credit, but he acknowledged the community of golf people like you and how much he loves it. He gets it. He's smart and he's funny. He gets it. Why be abrasive to people who are consuming golf from a gambling standpoint? I can make a lot more money as a brand, as a player, by just embracing these people. That's the smart play. Than saying, oh, strokes gain data, it sucks. And you guys are nerds. Leave us alone. So there you go. The last thing I'll talk about is the weather. As I said, from a weather data standpoint, it's a lot colder today than it was in June, and it was every other year I've lived in Kentucky. And that's got to stop. Especially when you show me the unbearable conditions of Pebble Beach, California, when it's sunny and 60, and you're by an ocean and playing golf. as I slide down my driveway on my face to my car again today. You weather slaps. All right, special guest Saul Goodman and Ryan. We'll see how this turns out. Let's talk to them, though, today.
Cash take you on the natural joint. Queen, get the money.
Tiger Woods, y'all.
All right, this week's Riviera. And it's very interesting, these podcasts. I'm going to surprise people with the guests every week. So this week we've got Ryan, of course.
Hey, Matt.
80 shows in. Hey, Ryan. What's up, man?
How you doing?
We were going to have Josh Slepko circling the drain at circling the drain or some variation of that name on Twitter, but he's at fucking CVS right now after like 3 hours. No, he's waiting for Top Shots. That's why. Of course he got like the number three pick on Top Shots.
Nobody runs better than CRC.
Nope. And so guess who folks we've got in place of CRC right now? It's the actual Saul Goodman DFS.
Yeah, I figured the bar was set so low by CRC last week that it was the right time for me to pop on here and chat a little bit.
Here's the thing with CRC, circling the drain, because I've never really mentioned his DK name or his Twitter name, but every time I'm in the running or you're in the running, Saul, in NHL for anything, guess who is right beside you?
That fucker.
That green logo. So he may pop in here like in the middle of this podcast and we'll let him just jump in thinking he is, you know, we're just starting the show, but whatever. Riviera is, by the way, welcome, Saul.
Good to be here. Thanks. Thanks for having me.
How many goals did Austin Matthews get tonight that Ottawa came back and won?
Yeah, I had Freddie Anderson, so 5-1 lead and lose to the Senators, so sums it up.
That's incredible.
Yes, the Sens.
Yeah.
So this week Riviera is what I like about this tournament is that this course, unlike the municipal course, 25 under Pebble Beach with no wind, which is completely too easy for the PGA Tour if there's no weather. This course demands a lot, and it is a major type course in that the winning score will be, you know, probably low teens. I'm going to say right now, 12 under par. But the course it's very difficult. Need to move the ball both ways, tight fairways, elevation changes, depth perception issues, small greens, very small POA greens, Kikuyu rough. Ryan, you ever play Kikuyu rough?
I don't think so. No.
What I hear is that it's like Velcro. It's the toughest grass to hit out of. Par fours, many of them you treat as par four and a half, much like Augusta. Off the tee is critical. Nowhere not to miss. Great wedge play, great iron play. And the less reliance, the less like everyone knocks Hideki. Okay, Hideki is the first price you see on the board and cannot not play him. But Hideki, you know, in huge birdie fests minus, you know, waste management, he doesn't perform well because he's got to make a lot of birdies with his putter and he can't do that. But in these contests, like Firestone when it's 9 under par, Hideki, who is an elite short game player, can succeed. Amazing tee to green, amazing iron player, elite around the green, and doesn't have to rely on his putter to get to 25 under. This course, though, a lot of caddies and players say it's the worst greens on tour. I'll take it for what it's worth. It's their words, not mine. Tiger Woods, the greatest putter of all time, said he has a hate relationship with these greens. He's never played well in them. And I don't think that's his fault. If you're reading between the lines, it's probably the course. Anything to add, Ryan or Saul?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's bullshit because I think the reason Tiger doesn't do well here is because he doesn't drive the ball very well. He's not as long as he used to be. He's obviously not that straight. And that's what you need here. I also want to say I appreciate you glossing over the Daniel Berger win last week because that does not need to be revisited.
He's very good. Can we just like?
He's very good. He's playing out of his mind. Yeah.
He's a four-time winner now. He's just a champion. I mean, he's got that grit to him. He's got that killer instinct. He's got parents who were professional athletes. He's got a 20-foot, 40-foot yacht. He's just that guy. Saul, do you like Daniel Berger?
No, I don't like Daniel Berger, and I'm happy we got the Hideki nonsense out of the way, so we don't have to talk about that anymore. I will have.
Well, Matt's going to talk about it. Don't worry.
0% Hideki this week, and thrilled about it. So
okay, that's the first razzle dazzle of the night because I don't believe it, but we'll go into it. Last week, tee to green. Last week, leaders tee to green going into this field are. Now I starred this. I will never play Harry Higgs again, but I start it because I probably will. Harry Higgs was first tee to green, albeit a miscut. He just could not putt last week. But his around the green game was pretty good, and his price this week is really low. And in a 120 man field where you're going to need some guys in the sixes, especially if the elite's going to win, I just start Harry Higgs. It's going to drive me crazy. Cantlay, this is TD Green. Cantlay, Berger, Maverick, Goat, Naismith, Goat, Chez Reavie, and Jordan Spieth. Approach, Higgs, again, starred. Chez, Bo Hogue, I started that. Miscut. But Bo Hogue was okay in his irons. And we know Bo Hogue's a good around the green player. Bo Hogue is 6,300 in this field. You're not going to get a lot of stuff in the sixes. Bo Hogue is still on my radar. Cantlay, Naismith, Goat, Russell Knox, Brian Harman. Unplayable Brian Harman. Course history. There's lots. I mean, DJ, Bubba, Rory, Scott, Xander. And form, everyone. I mean, there's so much form coming in here. DJ, Xander, Cantlay, Finau, Berger, Spieth. I can't read this. It says like Brodus. I can't read my own writing.
Is that Hovland? Should probably it say Hovland.
It says bread.
Probably Brodus. Says say Berger.
I don't know.
Brooks. There you go.
So what are your thoughts coming in from the old AT&T Pebble Beach?
Yeah, I mean, I think you nailed it. And I think we talked about this earlier about, you know, is Cantlay going to be popular? But I think you kind of just put it over the top there. He was number one tee to green last week. I think that's going to hold a lot of weight here, especially because there are some similarities, of course, between Pebble and Riv. They're pretty close geographically. Obviously not going to be as easy or as windy this week. But yeah, I think at the top here, I think you're going to see a lot of these guys play very well. So at the end of the day, I mean, you're going to want the winner, but ultimately I don't think it matters too much between these guys at the top who you're picking.
Saul?
Yeah, but the one thing about Cantlay leading last week is it was basically like the slapdick open. So if he didn't lead tee to green last week, we would have had a pretty big issue. So I will throw out last week's performance for Cantlay and probably play him anyway. But
The thing with Cantlay is that if you watch his swing, is there a more like technically balanced swing on tour than his? It's just, I mean, I have it bookmarked just to copy it this summer, see if I can mimic it. But his game, I mean, talk about, I know, Saul, you make fun of him on Twitter, but there are guys with like literally games with no flaws, and I could name five on tour. DJ?
No, super, super solid. He's a guy that, you know, like if you roster Hideki, you're gonna get some shit putting. Sometimes yes. You roster him, the ball's gonna be all over the map off the tee. Like Cantlay, he's not gonna do anything that's gonna drive you crazy. He's gonna be pretty decent at everything. So that's why he's good. Like a lot
DJ,
of
DJ, JT, Cantlay, Rom, Tiger when he's great, and of course the big Tongan from Utah, Tony Finau. Joining us from CVS right now, in the parking lot of CVS, Slep, are you there? He's not.
Of course not.
He's in the chat, and he said, "I'm listening to all of you, but we cannot hear him."
Well, I mean, this is even better. We're going to mute you anyway, so.
He said, "It's okay." He's got to go. He needs to address some things at home.
It's like 10:30 on a Monday, and this guy's out at CVS and needs to address things at home.
You, when you're out at CVS at 10:30, things are not going great.
Not great,
no. He said, quote, "Just remember who called the burger when." Officially banned from this podcast.
I kind of need to know what he was getting at CVS at 10:30 on a Monday. But
it's kid stuff. All right, so let's talk about DraftKings for a second here. So you've got some meat up top in the 10-plus range. DJ, JT, Rory, John Rahm, Bryson probably can't have two of them together. If you had to pick one, who you're picking? Ryan, Barif.
I like Dustin Johnson quite a bit, as I did last week.
Mm-hmm.
Spent an hour on this podcast talking about DJ. Not going to do that again, but I like DJ.
Saul?
Yeah, I like DJ too. I will say I will probably not have Rory in this group, and I think that's probably going to be my guess is that might be the popular way to go. I think his wedges and his approach play in general, I don't know. This is probably just from watching him, but it just seems a level down from the rest of these guys. And he just kind of never, like you've said multiple times in the last couple weeks or month, like he just never, the putts never actually go in the hole with him. So he would be the guy I'd leave out, I would say for sure.
I've never seen more putts not drop for an elite player than Rory McIlroy. I've never seen one drop from any distance that he needs. And I don't know if it's luck or just bad fortune or just the fact that he can't putt. I don't know what it is. I love Rory McIlroy. I'm a huge fan. It's between DJ and JT for me. If I had to fade, I'm obviously going to fade Bryson at that price because I remember him tearing apart a Nate Gashly style bunker. Remember that? Remember he destroyed a bunker?
Oh, yeah.
Anger? John Rahm. I'm gonna try to just do some confirmation bias for myself and say that he is worried about the child forthcoming and he didn't play, you know, number one style at Torrey Pines, blah blah blah. DJ's just in a class of his own. Then you get down to the nines, okay, which you've got several options. Top to bottom. Ryan, who do you like in the nines? Who do you like and who don't you like?
Daniel Berger. No, I think, yeah, I mean, we talked about this quickly. I think Patrick Cantlay is the ultimate lock there. But there, I mean, I don't have a
Why?
Single
price.
Price, course history, form, number one tee to green last week, which he said.
What do you think his ownership will be?
High, 28,
wow,
30.
No way. Really?
I think, yeah, so I mean, I think here what I would do, so Spieth is the worst play up here, very clearly, followed by Hideki.
Evil.
For Berger, you know, it's just kind of what you do after a win. I will say that probably the one that I feel most comfortable fading is going to be Morikawa. He is not obviously as strong off the tee as most of these guys up here. You know, when you compare him to Cantlay and Xander and Brooks and Finau. And he's also one of the worst putters up here. So I do not like Morikawa. I do not like Spieth. I pretty much love everybody else.
So,
yeah, I like Cantlay. Xander is a guy that I just will never get right. Pretty much resigned to that and resigned to getting crushed by him pretty much every week. So it'll probably be another Xander fade for me, but maybe, I don't know, if I do play 150 lineups, which I think I will, I'll probably just have a little bit of him. He has been hitting the ball pretty well. And this is actually more of a type of event and a pricing situation where I don't mind playing Finau a little bit. He obviously checks a lot of boxes with the ball striking and stuff, and I get uncomfortable with Finau when he's like the sixth highest priced golfer, but if he's the second guy in, you know, as sort of maybe like a pivot off Cantlay, if he is that high owned, I like that. And I echo Ryan with the full Spieth and Matsuyama fade away jumper here.
So Spieth price. I mean, I can make a case for anyone in this range, including Brooks. Xander probably wins and just kills us. Patrick Cantlay's price is ridiculously low, considering that I believe his game is pretty flawless. I bookmarked a swing. I'm gonna replicate it. I think it's so underrated, and I think he's so underrated. But Hideki, here's my case for Hideki. Okay, I said it early on that he doesn't have to rely on the putter to make a bunch of birdies to get to 20 under. He has success here for a reason. He's success on tough courses. Firestone, for instance, I'll never forget his 61 or 62 in the WGC. He wins on tough places. He does well at Augusta. And I think so many people are jaded by him. The jaded factor in fantasy sports and golf, like Reed, for instance, is just such an advantage the following week because people are just like, fuck it, I'm not playing Hideki. And I get that sense from everyone. And I could be killed by him, and I probably will, but I think Cantlay Hideki for me in that range is the best. Adam Scott's 9,000, by the way, last year's winner.
I think the good news for you, Matthew, is Matsuyama is extremely bad in the models this week. Bad in the models, which means he will finally not be popular. I mean, I don't think – I mean, maybe in some smaller field GPPs because people like to play him. But, I mean, overall, like, you might get him 8 to 9% owned, which I think you'll love that.
All right. Here's the 8 range. If I get 9 to 10% owned in a 120-man field, Matsuyama at 9K is crazy.
Yeah.
All right. 8K range. I'll start with Saul because I'm going to start with this guy. Bubba Watson's won here 3 times. Bubba Watson, like Fowler, like Matsuyama, is a guy you can never not play. And now you're tasked with the fact that he's sub 9, Saul. And you love Bubba Watson, but you also love hating him.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
It's a tricky proposition, the love hate with Bubba. I will not have him in single entry type stuff. I probably will just try to get roughly even with the field in MME stuff and just call it a day there. I think, you know, obviously he wins every other time he plays here, so
seems good.
It's an age old question with him. Like, do you play him at these courses? Do you fade him at these courses? Because if you just look at his game, you know, if it wasn't Genesis, I don't know. I wouldn't even glance at him in this range. I would just try to find some way to get a couple hundred more bucks and play Scott. Even at those numbers, I would rather play Matsuyama than a low owned Matsuyama in a GPP than Watson. But in the eights in general, I don't think this is going to be a range that I'm going to be in a ton. I like Hovland. I'll let Ryan get into that because I know he loves Hovland this week. Speaking to your point about sort of the recently burned last week factor, I actually think Zalatoris with this price, given the fact that he is a pure ball striker, he's got no course history. I mean, I think he's got like one missed cut a long time ago, maybe as an amateur even. I think this is a good spot to go back to him because I could see him making some noise. And I think, like you said, a lot of people were burned by him. So he would.
What's your feeling? Because you're one of the better NHL players I've ever played. Well, yeah, you just take a lot of money from me. What is your strategy when looking at a field in either GPP or even, you know, in cash games? What are you looking for? Price, ownership, or what? Like in a field like golf, what are you looking for? What's your key here, man?
Well, I considering
Sisima doesn't listen.
Considering I'm the only one on here that hasn't won like $1 million in a GPP lately in golf, I should probably ask you guys. But I don't know. For me, in the GPP world, what I generally try to do is try to make some stands where appropriate, and I'm not a huge fan of, you know, if a guy's going to be 15% owned, you know, I'd rather have zero than 4 or 5% personally. If I'm going to be right, I'd rather have more chances at sort of hitting the right puzzle pieces together. And for cash games, which I'm trying not to do this year in PGA because they drive me crazy. For cash games, it's just sort of the best play, the best value, most points type deal. Maybe some safer guys in cash games, but the word safe in PGA DFS is kind of a farce anyway. So, yeah, it's sort of just ownership, price, all those things combined. And then just, you know, pretty much get fucked over when they can't make a putt on Friday. So it all ends the same way.
The two guys I'll turn to you, Ryan, but the two guys I can't play almost ever are, especially a course like this, in that, I mean, people talk about Matt Wolf. Yeah, he's a great, you know, he's a good tee to green guy, but I just think this course demands so much more. And Matt Wolf and Scott Scheffler to me are just too manic that I cannot play it in this range. I just cannot do it.
Yeah, I think the issue with Scheffler, I mean, one, he's coming off a really good week in Phoenix. And two, has a much better short game than Matthew Wolf. You know, I trust him a lot more on and around smaller greens. Because when Matthew Wolf plays well, you know, he's still very hot and cold. Like, he'll shoot 8 under and then 1 over and then 9 under and then 2 over. But when he does that, he tends to do it with, you know, really good ball striking. And Scottie Scheffler can get hot on the greens. With that being said, no, neither one of them would be my favorites in this range. I kind of like to work backwards here in terms of, you know, crossing off the guys who I don't like. And I think the first two who both will probably garner some ownership this week are the two Aussies, Leishman and Cam Smith. I don't have a lot bad to say about them. I just don't like the prices. And I feel like Leishman is still like in that phase of kind of trying to overcome a horrible 2020. And when I see him priced here with Hovland and Neiman, like, no, I'm going to take the young guys and not Mark.
Let's just say that Hovland, I think we all agree, is the best. Him and Cantlay are the best priced on this entire board.
Yeah, I mean, throw Finau in there too. Yeah, I think Finau's way too cheap.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the cash start. I think you're going to see a ton of lineups this week that just start Cantlay, Finau, Hovland. And yeah.
And I agree with you, Saul Zalatoris, in that he'd take the burned factor last week and that Zalatoris did not play well at the price that he should have. And now you've got him, what, 1,000 plus cheaper?
Yeah.
A course that he could thrive at.
Yeah.
And I jumped down to the sevens. I could make a case for a lot of guys in the sevens. I love Kevin. I'm a huge Kevin Na guy. Kevin Na is a great long iron player, and he is elite around the greens.
Mm-hmm.
And that speaks to his success here, speaks to his success at the Masters in November. I think he was top 20, top 15. I could talk about, he talked about Ricky at 7.5.
That's crazy.
I guess that's a question I had for circling the drain as to whether or not he was going to play Ricky. But the guy I'd love at low prices, I mean, I get to make a case for Taylor Gooch. I'll name one, is Chez. And I asked you last week, I said, what's wrong with Chez? And then Chez came back last week and played really well, which he should do in California. And he likes this course. He's a good iron player. He's a good A to B type golfer. He's had some success here, and he's 7K, which there's not a lot of people, and you need some in that 7, 7.1 and lower range. I love Chez. I can't stop loving Chez. It's a huge issue. Ryan?
Yeah, we should prop bet Chez against KH Lee this week because they're about the same price.
I played KH Lee. I mean, I said KH Lee, I forget which tournament it was.
It's just one of those things. No, but look, it's just one of those things that, like, he's too cheap. He's got back-to-back top 25s here. He almost won in Phoenix. His ball striking is, I mean, out of this world right now. Like, you just play KH Lee and then move on. I will have a lot of KH Lee. I think when I look in this range too, I think there are a couple guys who are just more talented than the rest. I look at a Sergio for 7,700. Seems crazy. But as we experience week in and week out, we just get our souls mashed in by Carlos Ortiz and Russell Henley and Cameron Tringali. So people are going to play them. I don't fault them for it. I just think there are better golfers here. But I expect them just to keep smashing me. So.
Yeah. Just to go back to one quick point about the pricing real quick before I get into my one of the guys I like in the sevens. If you look at like Zalatoris and Max Homa, for example, their prices over the last 2 or 3 weeks, like Zalatoris was 9,900 and 9K, and Max Homa was 7,500. And yeah, Max played well, and Zalatoris made both cuts, disappointed, played poorly on Thursday both days, but I had him both weeks. So the one over 73 both weeks was not great. But now they're priced together, which to me, if you told us that 2 weeks ago, we would have just been very confused about it. So those are some of the things I look at too, where guys have big price drops or big price jumps. So that's another reason. And I like Homa, but I just feel like Zalatoris for that price is a good one. And then in the sixes, I mean, in the sevens, I like Matt Fitzpatrick. I know that's usually Ryan's brand, but
it's awesome.
He strikes me as a guy who, and this may just be what I have in my head about him, but kind of likes longer courses and tougher courses, and good long iron guy, good short game. It seems like he always shows up at these types of events with the stronger field. Maybe it's because he mostly comes over here for the stronger field, but he's a guy that I like. And yeah, I would, for 100 more than Rick Fowler, I am thrilled to.
Matt is going to tilt all week watching Fitzpatrick in his beanie putt with the flag stick in. It's going to be great.
Fitzpatrick is one of the most underrated winners in the world. He fucking wins, man.
I mean, yeah.
He's so young still, and he's got a trillion euro wins. He's really fearless. I agree. I mean, I thought, okay, Fitzpatrick's going to be – would you think Fitzpatrick is going to be 8,400 at least?
He usually is, yeah. In these sorts of fields, he always tends to be kind of overpriced, low eights or something like that. So,
yeah,
both him and Sergio, they're exceptionally cheap this week.
All right. The toughest range, which you're going to need something from likely, especially if you want to play DJ, is the sixes. If I'm Johnny Course History Stan, two names pop out. One, Von Taylor. I'm a huge, obsessive Von Taylor fan. Martin Laird. I don't know why. Well, I do know why. I mean, he won a few weeks ago, but he won, right?
Yeah, he won in the fall. The Shriners, I think.
Yeah, he won the Shriners. That's right. And he has success here. JB Holmes is the question mark at 6.5. And then Bo Hogue. So you were always the Bo Hogue preacher, Ryan. And I've gotten to admire Bo Hogue. He was, what was he, third approach last week. He's really good around the greens.
Yeah, the guy missed the cut by one shot last week. He bogeyed the last hole on Friday. So,
but that's the thing. It's that fuckery in that so many people were on Bo Hogue. He misses by one. People are like, I cannot deal with that guy.
Oh, exactly.
It's like Scott, You know what I mean? So it's like Stuart Sink. If Stuart Sink wins this week, I will die. I will literally jump out this window and die.
Yeah. I mean, and I think that leads you right to the other guy that I was going to say, who else
you
missed
say
the cut?
Sun Kang, I'm out of here.
No, but okay. Who else missed the cut by one last week? Harold Varner.
Everyone?
Varner like the chalkiest of chalky. He's played well here before.
Hang up the phone on Ryan. He said Harold Varner.
He's $1,000 cheaper this week than last week.
No, never.
My God, how are you not playing him for 6,700?
Never Varner. That's just the rule.
So I don't know.
Tell me that's true.
Yeah, never Varner is a
thank you.
I mean, yeah, I think he's exceptionally cheap. He fits in the mold of he burned you last week. People are not going to play them. He makes a lot of birdies. Yeah, I mean, there's actually a couple guys here. I think the one actually good play is Matt Neesmith, who, I mean, we've been playing him over and over and over again. I don't know why he's under 7K. It just seems like just play him and just hope that it continues. I think the other name for GPPs that you need to consider here is Doc Redman. He won the US Amateur here, which I'm sure you'll hear 1,000 times by the end of this week.
That's a good point.
He's been bad. I mean, quite frankly, he's been bad, but obviously has some good vibes here. He had one good round in Phoenix, round two, just had a bad round one. So, yeah, I mean, he can make a cut for 6,600.
Who's your sneaky play in the sixes, Saul?
Well, it was Doc Redman, but as a seconds ago, that's not sneaky anymore.
Just say T dunks.
I would say something that interests me this week is to see what the ownership is like on these guys. There's like three or four guys who have really good course history here and really, really suck now. So it's like Sun Kang, although he kind of always sucked. CH3, JB Holmes, Patrick Rogers. Like they all have somewhere between like 4 and 7 years straight of making cuts, and their recent form is abysmal. They have like a combined 12 missed cuts in the last 3 weeks or something. So
okay, I got, let me tell you this. I got to tell the story now. Yeah. You guys both know the story. I got shivers when he said the word CH3. Let me take you back to Torrey Pines. I wake up Thursday morning after lock. I've got all my teams in, the $55 max, $12 max, whatever it is. I made the teams at 1:30 a.m. because my kids were sick. And I just put in a lineup. I thought it was good. And Saul texts our group and he says, "Hey, Matt, I just saw your lineups. And I saw that you had CH3 at 90%. I said, "That's impossible. It's impossible. Cannot be true." And it turns out it was true in that somehow the wonderful Roto Grinders app and optimizer had put 90% of my lineups, 60%, which is 90 lineups, in Charles Howell III. Well, round one, what did Charles Howell shoot? Like 85?
Yeah, 80-something.
You also had like 50% Billy Horschel too, I think.
Yes. Yeah. It was that bad. And I made a lot of mistakes. I'm not going to lie. It was just a bad calculation algorithm for me. I can never. There are all those players that you can never play. I can never play CH3 ever. Ever.
I can't blame you there.
Can't do it.
Matt, what do you
think? Mark Hubbard is almost there for me too.
Matt, what do you think of Wes Bryan this week?
That's what I think. Who's your okay? One winner. Let's go. Who's your winner, Ryan? Go.
DJ.
Yes.
Okay.
Who's your winner, Saul? Go.
I will go with the ultimate razzle dazzle and say that Bryson is going to win.
Jesus Christ.
That's a one and done podcast.
We didn't even mention Bryson in the 40 minutes we've been on here. And now Saul's going to drop.
He's trolling. He's not real. My winner's Harry Higgs.
Bryson's your winner. There you go. 10:33 p.m. Monday.
Pathetic.
DJ's winning. Come on.
Of course.
Let's get real. Hey, Saul, it was great to hear your voice. The world is excited to hear it.
Thanks for having me on. Thanks to Circling the Drain for stepping aside so kindly. And Ryan, always good to speak with you too, my friend.
Absolutely. We'll talk soon, boys.
See you guys.
See ya.
All right, in close, big shout out to Kevin Barry, my man. Firefighter, 9/11, the man. Great family, struggling with ALS. We talk on DM periodically. He lifts my spirit. He said he loves my energy. Sometimes I do these podcasts and have so much, all the time I do these podcasts, I don't listen to them ever because I have so much self-hate the next day about just talking either about myself or things. I can't believe I said these things to the world or these periscopes. But, you know, between him and then, you know, Sweat for Days, who said he listens to it while putting down his kid at night, his 4-week old. Apologies to the kid for this entering his young mind, this content. But if it's just two people saying, hey, it makes your energy or your attempt to make people laugh makes things better for me for like an hour, especially for a guy like Kevin, knowing what he's going through, and I'll do anything for that guy, I will sit here in minus 10 weather outdoors into this podcast for 20 hours. I don't care. I will do it. That is the least I could do for someone who's served this country and going through what he's going through. I promise you that. And that is not any way a joke. And my DMs are littered with people I talk about stuff with off the record that I just, you know, I enjoy that part. Helping people out any way I can. Now, do I want to beat you in DraftKings fantasy sports? Yes, of course. Do I want to take the $300K this week? Yes, and bust your heads in? Of course. I'm not going to lie about that. Yeah. I'm not going to razzle-dazzle you like some people I know and say I'm going to play JB Holmes and not play him. It's DJ week, though. I'll have a list on Wednesday. Let's do a Periscope. We'll do the top 10. You know who number one's going to be every week. But we'll figure this out. Yeah. Until then, some Arcade Fire. Until 179? Is that what? No, 180? I'm a mess. I guess it's 180. Whatever.